Kuzu Zangpo Lau. Welcome to the RIX podcast. I'm Michelle Omdendo, and I'll be hosting the second episode of the RIX podcast series on artificial intelligence. As research and development in AI progresses, it's becoming clear that AI's potential extends far beyond robots and self-driving cars. We're increasingly witnessing the tremendous promise AI holds in transforming our worlds for the better. Innovative AI tools are being developed to address some of the world's most pressing issues, from enhancing education and healthcare to preventing crimes and disaster and addressing the climate change. AI has proven to be a boon to humanity and a powerful force for good. In the second episode of the four-part RIX podcast series on artificial intelligence, we will explore how AI can be a catalyst for social change, addressing pressing issues, and improving lives in Bhutan and beyond. With Rudradeep Mitra, the founder of Omdena, he started his career as an AI researcher and co-authored 10 research papers during his academic life. A graduate of the University of Cambridge, Rudradeep transitioned into the startup ecosystem, where he built and scaled several successful ventures. His current brainchild, Omdena, stands as a beacon of innovation, having developed solutions to over 250 organizations across more than 70 countries and upskilled over 30,000 individuals. Welcome to the RIX podcast, Ru. Thank you so much for taking time off your busy schedule to be with us today. Let me start off by asking you, what does AI for social innovation mean to you, and why is it important for addressing societal challenges?
Well, the AI for social innovation basically for me means that we are using AI for solving social challenges, innovating different products and solutions to serve the people. In a nutshell, that's what it means to me. Now, why is that important? Well, I always believe that every kind of technology should be used to solve social problems and help people. That's the end goal of every technology. So I think that's just the purpose of every technology, whether it's AI or blockchain or any other technology we look at it. That's the purpose of every technology should be. So that's why it's so important that we are using technologies like AI to solve these kind of social problems. But also I believe that there's a huge opportunity to use AI to solve these kind of problems. If I look at historically, there is a lot of access to, for example, let's take an example, like access to healthcare or right information to farmers. A lot of those things couldn't be done in the past because there was no proper technology to do that. Although you had mobile phones and the internet, but they were still not getting the right information, the right data, the right knowledge. Now, with AI, we have the opportunity to provide the right knowledge to those people to help them. So this is one of the use cases. So I do really believe that not only every technology, but the purpose of AI should be primarily to solve these kind of social problems to help the people who are actually at the bottom of the pyramid, because that's a huge opportunity also we have.
Right. Thank you. Like you rightly pointed out, AI and technology should be in the first place developed to solve societal issues. So a very profound statement. Thank you. And moving on, what are some specific socioeconomic challenges in Bhutan that you think AI could help address?
Right. The opportunities that I see in Bhutan. So I was in Bhutan earlier this year, in February and March. And I think historically, Bhutan has been known for a country which has always focused on happiness, building compassion and connections, society, which is driven by these kind of values. I think that's a great thought process in today's world. I think what Western world or even most of the world is missing out is having this way of looking at the life. And I think that gives a Bhutan an opportunity to perhaps take that knowledge, that information, and build solutions to help people globally solving mental health problem. I think this is one of the biggest problem in today's world. I think that the way people in Bhutan are thinking differently, it could they could potentially come up with solutions that can be applied worldwide. So that's one of the opportunities that I do think people in Bhutan have to not only solve the problem at the local level, but also at the global level. But other than that, there's a lot of things that we can do in Bhutan for people in Bhutan using AI. I had the opportunity to meet with the Prime Minister Tsering Tobgay when I was in Bhutan, and we were talking about how we can use to analyze land covers, how we can look at different, what are the different crops are being used, how to optimize crop yield. There's so many use cases that we can have in Bhutan, like any other place in the world. From agriculture, could be from healthcare, it could be even on sectors like transportation, tourism. There's a lot of opportunities that could be, we have different cases that could Bhutan apply for their own country to improve the services and serve the people. Yeah, that's the way I see these opportunities to be in Bhutan.
Thank you. Issues like addressing food security by optimizing crop yields, but through the use of AI and improving access to healthcare and public transportation are definitely some of the critical areas, especially for a small developing country like ours. And it is really interesting to see how AI can provide tailored solution to our unique challenges. And I think it really brings home the point that AI, when used thoughtfully, can be a powerful tool to bridge gaps and create more equitable access to essential services. And that I believe is what AI for social innovation truly stands for. So, Ru, while I was preparing for this podcast, I came across a report by the World Economic Forum on the impact of AI for social good, which highlights that while there is a strong AI for impact ecosystem in high-income countries, especially in the United States, low and middle-income countries often lack support for social innovations or localized initiatives. In what ways do you think governments of the developing nations can contribute to mobilizing the required support system? Of course, we understand that the high-income nations can afford to allocate more resources towards research and development in AI, which in turn can help boost the ecosystem. But how can small economies like Bhutan, or perhaps all the countries in the global south, cultivate an enabling environment for the AI impact innovation system to grow to ultimately help in their developmental process?
I haven't read the report, but I would actually have a different opinion about that. It is true that the developed world has more resources and money to invest in AI research. But in most of the cases, almost 90 to 95% of the cases of the use cases that we have worked in Africa, South America, Asia, it's not required to do a huge research and development. What is required is applying the existing models, maybe doing some sort of innovation, but that's not intensive in terms of resources or money. It actually requires the will of the government and to actually use create a concept like AI lab, what Bhutan government is doing actually, that facilitating people to upskill themselves to learn new things and apply the knowledge that they have learned to solve the problems that they are facing. The good side of AI is that because of access to knowledge has become so democratized, you can get basically the same kind of knowledge sitting in Bhutan in Thimphu, what you can get in sitting in Stanford. Because you have all the courses, you have all the materials, open source libraries and tools. So, and that most of these are reasonably very cheap. So it's not a question of resources or money. It's just a question of the will of the government to set up that environment, to facilitate that environment. I'll give you an example. I was in Tanzania a couple of months ago, and we ran something called a climathon, which is basically encouraging people at the grassroots level to come up with ideas to solve climate problems and helping them build AI solutions for that. And within a week, we had over a few hundred people applying from different parts, and I was there in Dar es Salaam, and I met those people who had spent the entire weekend, very motivated, very encouraged. They had access to the best libraries. Of course, they didn't have old computers and laptops, but that's not a problem because you still can access the internet and use the servers and cloud infrastructure that's out there, which requires some money, but not a lot of money. So I know for example, in Bhutan, in the tech park, you are setting up the infrastructure. You are providing that station or the place where people can come in and access the internet. And to the if they don't have their own laptops, they can have access through the devices that in the tech park they are planning to give, an environment where people can come in, work together, learn from each other, and and build solutions together. So that is what is required. What I have seen actually, if you look at the developing world, I think the AI can really benefit the developing world much more because there's a lot of possibilities of social innovations in these countries, whether you can pick up any sector. So I think that that's the route that government should take is create an ecosystem which facilitating a place where people can come get access to the necessary tools and the knowledge, and which is often, as I said, just giving them perhaps access to a laptop. If you haven't seen, there's a TED Talk called School in the Cloud, and it's a beautiful talk where the guy was talking about how just giving an access to a computer in to kids in slum can basically change the way they learn things, and they can quickly learn a lot of things that it can take ages and years for them to perhaps go to school and learn in a traditional sense. So I think that's what the governments in developing world needs to do.
I totally agree. It's not the question of resources, but the will of the government to facilitate their people and upskill them to ultimately help them apply the knowledge to solve their societal issues. And it is also particularly exciting to learn about the immense potential that AI holds for the Global South and how AI is democratizing access to advanced tools and insights. In fact, experts are already predicting that artificial intelligence could become society's great new equalizer. And this, I believe, comes as a good news for a small resource-constrained country like Bhutan. Now, talking about innovation, you have extensive experience with working and founding several successful startups. So I'd like to know, how do you see AI contributing to the development of the startup and entrepreneurial ecosystem in a small economy like Bhutan?
And I had a similar discussion when I was in Bhutan with different people, including I think the minister or the GovTech people. And my argument was, when you compare, let's look at a country like Estonia, which is I presume a similar size country, also a lot of natural resources and forest, and it has actually over the last, say, if you look at the last 10 years, it has been able to build some great companies like Skype and TransferWise, right? So I think it's the size of the company, or the size of the country is not necessarily a hindrance in actually building that ecosystem in the country. What I truly believe, like a country like Bhutan has the willpower, and I think the government has the willpower, and the people are looking to utilize that whatever limited resources they have to the best they could do. Which is very important, right? And on top of that, I think people in Bhutan have a different way, as I initially said, a different way of looking at life compared to what I see in, let's say, West or even in many parts in the world, around the world. So which perhaps gives them an opportunity to think of solutions and solving problems like mental health in an innovative way, which can potentially have great success globally around the world. Now, what is really required from such creating such an ecosystem? So we are talking about creating something like a startup incubator and a lab, which is again creating an environment where the people can come in and try to think differently and try to build that kind of startups or the solutions. It's what they really require is an encouragement. What they really require is an ecosystem where they can have access to the best resources and the knowledge. Like, building a company is a lot to do with access to the right people and the resources and the knowledge, and often encouragement. And that's again creating an ecosystem. I remember I come from a kind of middle class family in India, and I remember I never thought that I would open and build a company. And it changed when actually I was in Cambridge. I was a student there, and I had the opportunity to meet I think Twitter co-founder. And when after speaking to that person for 15 minutes, I felt that okay, if not that he was super smart, of course he was a smart guy, but he was not like an extraordinarily smart. He was just that he had the right opportunities at the right time while growing up in the US, for example. So it's a lot to do with, first of all, getting over this mental barrier that okay, I can do that too. I mean, that's the first where it starts. So people in Bhutan have to believe that yes, if you put your time and effort and work hard, you can achieve what anyone in the world can achieve. And then providing the right ecosystem and the knowledge and connections so that they can start building those solutions and potentially grow, build companies that globally. I think that's what it's again comes down to the same thing as like as an AI thing, same with the startup. Create an ecosystem. What I have by far seen that people around the world, including Britain, are super motivated. They want to do things. So it's just that give them the right platform and encourage them, and that's all. And then they will be able to build those solutions.
Thank you, Ru. Some really great insights once again. Now, when we talk about leveraging AI for social good and innovation, a question that often comes up is how do we balance AI innovation with ethical considerations that AI comes with? We understand that regulating AI is one way to counter the ethical challenges, but regulation is often seen as a hindrance to innovation. And we see most developed and advanced nations worldwide are struggling to strike this balance. So, how can Bhutan achieve this delicate balance between innovation and regulation to promote AI for social innovation?
Well, I do believe that there is a need for some sort of regulation in AI specifically because we are dealing with data. The data, first of all, if we are training an AI model with the bad data, then the model itself will be biased, which we don't want to do, right? So that's where it's a need for regulation also. But also secondary, often there should be a regulation on top of that by saying restricting on certain kind of personal data should not be used, or when people are giving the data, they need to know how this data is being used, right? So I do think that these two are something that there should be a regulation on. And I think there are many, as you know, Europe, US, every country is coming up with their AI regulations to deal with this kind of personal data, or how do you try to avoid having, for example, biased AI solution. So and again, I guess there could be a light version and there could be a heavy version. Well, if we look at the regulations, the European government has come with a too heavier regulation, while the US government has gone to a more lighter version of the regulation on AI. I think a country like Bhutan can perhaps potentially doesn't have to reinvent the wheel and kind of I normally favor the light version of the AI regulations, which is basically restricting certain, uses of personal data needs to be anonymized or consent being asked by the people. And of course, making sure that data is not biased. Again, it's up to the people that are building the solution, but there has been some regulations on not using the biased data. Now, that's where I see the need for regulations of AI. However, there's a lot of already available open source data. For example, if you look at the agriculture sector, satellite images, where you don't need to have much regulation actually, because you're just using satellite images to analyze some sort of, how will I say, what are the yield, for example, prediction of a given piece of land. That you don't need to deal with personal data. These are basically, you can use a lot of generic open source data that you could build such kind of solutions. And how do you know something is biased or not biased? You don't necessarily need a regulation for these kind of solutions. You can test those through a verification model, right? So you see the accuracy of the model. So you know that when the model, how accurate it is performing on different kinds of key cases, so you know how good the data is or not. So what you have to understand that is one side of the regulations is required specifically when you're dealing with personal data, absolutely. But there is a lot of use cases that are out there that doesn't deal with the personal data, that doesn't need any much of a heavy AI regulations or even lightweight regulation, that could where you could actually use a lot of open source data and you can actually test the models quite well by having good set of verification data sets, right? And you know that how well they are performing. So in those kind of scenarios, I think there's not much regulations required. So you can actually continue building the solutions. And where there is a need for regulations, instead of reinventing the wheel, you can look at what the other countries have done the regulation, like the US, and perhaps prefer to choose maybe a more of a lightweight version of the regulations that normally I would prefer to make basically to make sure that the data that people are sharing are not misused in any other. So I think that's the way I will perhaps answer the regulation side of it.
So, incorporating lighter or rather subjective ethical guidelines and regulatory frameworks on aspects such as the use of personal data to address the biases that AI brings with it, and also leveraging on the already available resource on these regulations, some very useful advices yet again. Moving on. So, AI experts often report that a key challenge in applying AI in social innovation is bridging the trust gap. So, between the people that are the consumers and the developers, those are the producers, and also between the developers and the government, who are the regulators. So, how can this trust be achieved?
the approach that we take, and we believe that AI should be built through grassroots engagement, engaging the communities and upskilling those people who would actually ultimately benefit from the solution, and using them with the global experts, collaboratively working together to build the solution. And this has been our approach throughout the different countries that we have worked in. For example, when we went to Tanzania to build a solution to track deforestation, yes, we could have just brought one or two experts and gone and built the solution, right? But our approach was to first get a pool of 300 to 400 people in Tanzania to upskill them, to give them the knowledge so that they understand, they can be part of building the solution. Of course, not everyone were, but some of those who performed well kept on moving forward and they were involved in building the solution. Now, I think that's not only guarantees a more unbiased solution because the people who are on the ground aware of the problem would also be aware of the biases in the data. The reason a lot of people, developers, end up building unethical solution, not because they are want to build an unethical solution. They end up building an unethical solution because they are not aware of the data, much aware of the data on the ground level. You know, someone sitting in Silicon Valley will not have that understanding of the data in, say, Africa. So by engaging the people at the grassroots level, and making them part of building the solution together, if there is a skill gap with the global community. So we are not only ensuring that it will be more unbiased data, sorry, but it will also be trustworthy. Primarily because, you know, it's there is no normally people are not going to build the solution that they're going to use, which is, you know, in any form, I will say be unbiased, but also that creates the trust in the society. So if the people know, oh, okay, this is being built by the local people, by the engaging the people and the stakeholders, that's at the trust. And it's also a more sustainable model because then we kind of build the man force in the community so that they can continue building and improving the solution as and when required.
Thank you. So upskilling and grassroots engagement, as you mentioned, will be vital in bridging the trust gap. And I think it's with any other new innovation, it's all about making AI understandable and approachable for everyone. And I think it really boils down to how you communicate and educate the people, be it the consumers or the decision makers, and actually working together, like you mentioned, to building those AI solutions can help build the public trust on the technology and its vast potential. In some of your previous interviews, you spoke about the three C's, the collaboration, compassion, and consciousness to address bad AI and ultimately achieve AI for good. Can you please share more about these principles with our listeners here?
Yeah, so I briefly touched upon the collaboration part in the previous answer, right? So I said that AI should be built in collaboration with the people at the grassroots level and the global community working together, and that ensures a more ethical solution. The second point I said precedes the compassion, right? Now, that's more relates to the developers themselves being more compassionate about what they are building. I think that's also plays a big role because if we as a human develop our own compassionate level, we would end up again building more ethical solutions. And it's not just about AI, but in general about anything that we are building. I think when you look at the startup ecosystem or any of the tech ecosystem that's happening in the world, you will see so many unfortunately unethical founders or startups are being built, which are purely driven by I will say maximizing profits, and there's nothing wrong in profits, but purely driven by maximizing profits unethically also. And I think there's a need for building a compassionate humans who actually will go and build this, be part of building the solution. And consciousness is even, I think, a higher level than compassion because, you know, consciousness is being that you are conscious about the effects of what we are building on the society and the world. Whether we should go and build a solution that, you know, encourages mass consumerism, or whether we should go and build a solution that is encouraging cutting of trees in the world, right? So there are different aspects of that. So, and that's the compassion that we need as a society so that we can build solutions that are, let's say, good for the world rather than bad for the world.
I love how you bring in the human element with compassion and consciousness. So, like you mentioned, while the former reminds developers to focus on the well-being of the individuals and communities, the latter keeps us aware of the broader implications of our actions and prompting us to consider long-term effects and ethical ramifications of our decisions. And we have collaboration, of course, to bind the two together to ensure that the diverse perspectives are considered, leading to more holistic and inclusive solutions. So thank you yet again for those amazing insights. We have now come to the last question that I have lined up for you today. Coming back to Omden now, can you please tell us more about the amazing company that you founded? And how has your work with Omdena influenced your views on the role of collaborative platforms in addressing global challenges through AI? Also, please do shed some light on the Bhutan AI Lab that Omdena launched earlier this year in collaboration with the Druk Holdings and Investments and the Thimputec Park.
Yeah, so Omdena was started like 2019, right? And the basic idea at the time when I started was, can I create a platform where people from all over the world can come together, collaborate, and build a solution? Interestingly, at that time when I started, I never thought it to be a company because it's kind of, it's kind of counterintuitive to think that you can bring people who have never met each other, and this is pre-COVID, right? Who have never met each other, who don't know each other from different countries across different cultures, can collaborate and build solutions. But I just thought it as like a social experiment, to be very honest. And what turned out over the last 5 years has been, I will say, it's a great experience. And quite a humbling experience for me to see there's so many talented people in this world, very good humans who are willing to give their time and be part of doing something good in the world. And I think that's is a very, very encouraging because if you look at, unfortunately, in social media, a lot of things that's out there is more negative, right? It's just like, all these things. But, and of course, I understand that's something that people consume more. But okay, those things are promoted. But building Omdena has shown me that this is an amazing, this like hidden talent that we call, let's say, or silent majority. That's, some people use that words. Who are really nice, compassionate, and conscious people who are here for the right reasons to do good things for the world. But yeah, that's what I think has been the biggest learning and experience for me, which adds a lot of confidence that despite having all those challenges that we are facing in the world, we are capable of solving those if we collectively work together. In terms of the Bhutan AI lab, yes, so I had the opportunity to be in Bhutan and we did some projects last year and I really liked being in Bhutan. I actually wrote that among 100 different countries I've been in the world, for me, Bhutan is actually one of the perhaps, if not the best country I have been. And it has to do with overall, when I was there, how people behave and they treat you. You can see a sense of calmness and peace overall in the society and the people, which is missing actually. I mean, and it's not about West and the East anymore, even if you go to cities like in India or other parts. I mean, we are kind of in a hurry to always go to the next stage and, not being present and kind of living in the moment. So I really enjoyed being there. And again, that gives me a thought that because people are different, that would maybe, if we create the right ecosystem, that Bhutan can be in a place where some of the knowledge that they have inside them could be applied through perhaps solutions and products that can be global in the world. Now, that's the initial thought that I had. And of course, when I was there during my discussions with different stakeholders, economically, I also understand that Bhutan wants to be in a stage where there is opportunities for people in the country so that they don't have to leave the country. And I understand that that is one of the major concern of the government, that a lot of skilled people are leaving the country. And the thought was, how do we create an ecosystem in Bhutan that can help the talented people stay in their country? And then the idea of the AI lab came and it's like, can we create an environment where people can not only get upskilled, but then while living and staying in Bhutan, they can get access to the jobs and opportunities working for different companies around the world, but also have the ability to build their own companies or startups in Bhutan, sitting in Bhutan, solving global problems. So that's the basic idea of the AI lab is basically main few of those focus areas is how do we not only upskill people, how do we give them opportunities to work across the world in different countries? Because today's world, because it's so online driven that you don't have to go in different countries to work. And also the third part is how do we encourage an ecosystem in Bhutan so that people can go and build potential solutions which are global and also local, solving the problem. And of course, to all of those benefits, of course, I think that a lot of local companies and governments might benefit from the workforce that is being upskilled in Bhutan or the solutions being developed to use internally to optimize their services. And that's the whole idea of the AI lab.
Great, thank you. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed your stay in Bhutan and we look forward to welcoming you back again. Your experience at Omdena highlights the power of, again, the third C that we talk about, collaboration, and the importance of collecting diverse perspectives in problem solving. I'm also happy to share that I have got to experience a small portion of what Omdena has to offer through the data science course that Omdena provided in collaboration with DHI back in 2020. 22. And I'm very excited to see all the homegrown innovations that the Bhutan AI Lab will put forth to address Bhutan's socioeconomic needs, the importance of creating an enabling ecosystem for social innovation to not just grow, but thrive has been a key message throughout this session. So thank you again. Before we close off the episode, do you have any other comments or topics that you'd like to touch upon?
No, I enjoyed our conversation, and I'm definitely looking forward to coming back sometime, maybe later this year or early next year.
All right. Thank you. With this, we've come to the end of the episode. Thank you once again for joining us today and for sharing your expertise and your thought-provoking insights with us.
Thanks a lot. It was nice talking to you.